final case on the calendar for the morning. That's appeal number 07-3857, United States versus USARA. Mr. Schiff.
It's been a dry day. I'm sitting here in the courtroom.
Sorry?
Listening to dry arguments here, and you got all dried out.
I have to say, I love the first three arguments. Oh. I really did. I don't have an Iraqi spy as a client. I cannot do my argument in doo-wop. And although I have prosecuted and represented tax protesters, it's been quite some time. May it please the court, counsel for the government. My name is Richard Schiff from Montgomery McCracken, Walker & Rhodes in Philadelphia, and I represent Iqbal Busara in this matter. As the court is aware, this is the second time this case has been before the court. The first time I was here, the court vacated Mr. Busara's life sentence and sent the case back to Judge Griesbach in Wisconsin for resentencing. We did that about a year ago. And I'm here because we believe that Mr. Busara's 40-year sentence is unreasonable and must be vacated. Essentially, the district court's finding that Mr. Busara was the killer and of equal culpability to Mr. Singh is clear error. And the finding of the district court is grounded in a presumptively unreliable statement of Mr. Busara's co-defendant, Malkeet Singh. The court justified its reliance on Mr. Singh's statement by saying that it was consistent with the physical evidence, but I suggest it is not, and the district court did not cite the physical evidence that it was so-called consistent with. And the district court ignored inconsistencies within Mr. Singh's statement itself, which undermined its credibility and therefore the court's findings. Indeed, at one portion of the record, I believe at A103 in the first sentencing, the court itself rejected certain aspects of Mr. Singh's statement, as it did Mr. Busara's. And in other respects, at A104, the court made findings with respect to what happened, which are based on no evidence whatsoever. The court also relied somewhat on the evidence from Mr. Singh's trial. He went to trial. Mr. Busara entered a guilty plea. And I suggest that the issue in that case does not help the court's findings with respect to the reliability of Mr. Singh's statement. And so with either no reliable evidence to support or overcome the presumption of unreliability of Mr. Singh's statement and no evidence to support the court's findings, the court's finding that Mr. Busara was the killer and it was of equal culpability to Mr. Singh cannot be supported. Mr. Singh's statement was a classic post-arrest statement of a co-defendant taken approximately 1 week after the crime, after he fled the scene, or fled New Jersey, where they had buried the body. Under United States versus Jones, such a statement bears a very strong presumption of unreliability, and yet the district court relied on it and tried to rehabilitate it. As the court in Jones said, such a confession can be subject to a shift of responsibility, that is, one defendant pointing to the responsibility of the other. And therefore, it raises questions as to the veracity of that statement, and that is the precise circumstance here. So, what are the statements of Mr. Singh that were credited by the district court? First, that Mr. Busara struck the fatal blow. And this was found without saying, as I said, that it was supported by any of the physical evidence. The court did not cite any of the physical evidence. And the reality is the physical evidence says nothing about who struck the decedent, Mr. Akhtar. All it does is suggest that Mr. Singh substituted Mr. Busara for himself as being the killer. Now, the court should not take my word for that, obviously, because there are internal inconsistencies to Mr. Singh's statement. First, he says that Mr. Busara struck the fatal blow, and yet in the same statement, after he describes, of course, Mr. Busara's activity, that is, that he was peaceably sitting on a couch and then all of a sudden reacted violently, started to pace around the room, and then went into the bedroom and struck Mr. Oktar with a dumbbell. But later on in the statement, at page 9 of the same statement recorded by the FBI, he tells the FBI that he told his girlfriend that he, Mr. Singh, hit the guy. And so I suggest that there's an internal inconsistency in Mr. Singh's statement about who the killer was to begin with. The court also found that Mr. Bussara staying with the body was consistent with his involvement with the actual murder. And yet, again, Mr. Singh in his own statement said that he instructed Mr. Bussara to do that, and that is found at page 7 of Mr. Singh's statement. And, of course, that is consistent with the only testimony that we had the benefit of hearing, which was the testimony of the nephew, Mr. Iqbal, at the first sentencing of Mr. Bussara, who testified after Judge Griesbach asked him who was the leader. He said Mr. Singh was the leader. So at the end of the day, the district court made findings that Mr. Bussara and Mr. Singh assaulted Mr. Oktar together. And yet, that finding by the district court is found nowhere in the evidence. It's not in Mr. Singh's statement, and it's not in Mr. Bussara's statement, and it's certainly not supported at all by the physical evidence. I would suggest to this court that Mr. Singh's story that Mr. Bussara is the killer really makes no sense. Mr. Bussara did not even know the decedent. To the contrary, Mr. Singh had a significant financial dispute with the decedent. He admitted that he went to Wisconsin to coerce the decedent to go through with this deal to sell a gas station or to give him his money back. He admits that he had a heated argument with Mr. Oktar in the apartment and then suggests in his statement that he decided he would settle it peaceably in the morning and then, of course, describes and says that Mr. Bussara is the one who did the killing. And when the police started to close in on both Mr. Singh and Mr. Bussara, Mr. Singh flees to New York, and what does Mr. Bussara do? He turns himself in. Mr. Bussara had no reason to harm the defendant. He had no motive to do so. He had never met Mr. Oktar before the night of the killing. And I've described all the relationship between Mr. Singh and how frustrated he was that this deal did not go through. There were other contested findings based on Mr. Singh's presumptively unreliable statement that the court credited, and that is when Mr. Bussara joined the conspiracy. Singh says that it happened at inception before they left New Jersey to come to Wisconsin. Mr. Bussara says it happened sometime later. Who decided to kidnap the nephew? Mr. Singh, of course, blames Mr. Bussara. Bussara blames Singh. And who decided to bury the decedent? Again, Mr. Singh says that was Mr. Bussara's idea, whereas Mr. Bussara says it was Mr. Singh's idea. The bottom line here is because there was no reliable evidence or reason to defeat the presumption of unreliability of Mr. Singh's statement, the district court committed clear error by relying on it. It also relied on the trial of Mr. Singh. And first, we didn't participate in that trial at all. We didn't cross-examine anyone in that trial. We were not parties in the trial. And although Mr. Singh's statement was admitted in that case as part of the affirmative evidence, and there was testimony about it, Mr. Singh, of course, did not testify. He wasn't required to, and therefore he was not subject to any cross-examination. His statement and story, therefore, has never been subject to any adversarial testing whatsoever. And lastly, the issue in that trial was not who the killer was, but rather the issue was when Mr. Oktar died, because it was relevant to the issue of transportation for purposes of the kidnapping charge with respect to Mr. Oktar. And so nothing in that case. Thank you. I reserve the rest of my time.
Ms. Jacobs.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. Michelle Jacobs for the United States. I would submit that this appeal really is dispositive, or the standard of review is dispositive here. As counsel started his argument, He indicated that this court is going to review for clear error Judge Griesbach's factual findings, and ultimately the question is the reasonableness of the sentence. Well, he spent his time talking about Mr. Bussara's, essentially, construction of the evidence or his view of the evidence and how his view is that the other guy hit Mr. Akhtar, Mr. Singh hit Mr. Akhtar. Judge Griesbach saw it differently. He presided over the trial of Mr. Singh. He presided over a protracted sentencing with respect to Mr. Bussara. He reviewed not only Mr. Singh's statement, but Mr. Bussara's ever-changing accounts of what happened on the night of the assault and ultimately the murder. And he commented at length, especially in the first sentencing, about how the evidence other than those statements corroborated Mr. Singh's ultimate accusation that Mr. Bussara hit the victim, but really corroborated that independent of their statements. Mr. Bussara stayed with that body, drove the body from the apartment where Mr. Akhtar was initially hit. He drove the body he stayed with the nephew, Mr. Iqbal, the first night of the kidnapping when they got to New Jersey, with the body at the hotel, in the hotel room or the hotel parking lot. He drove the body to the gas station where they left the car until they decided what to do. And he drove the body to the burial site when they buried the body. That some of that kind of evidence, he came to Milwaukee or he came to Wisconsin to be the muscle in this kidnapping. He was the one that assaulted the nephew. So Judge Griesbach looked at all of that evidence. And his view of the evidence, supported by the trial record, supported by the sentencing record in Mr. Bussara's case, certainly, I would submit, is not clear error. It should not leave this court with a definite or firm conviction that Mr. Bussara had not hit him, that Mr. Singh had hit him. And ultimately, what this court is asked to do is to review the reasonableness of the sentence. Judge Griesbach not only relied on the fact that Mr. Bussara hit Akhtar or committed the initial assault. He looked at the seriousness of the offense. He looked at the fact that four young boys had lost their father, regardless of who hit him. These two planned this kidnapping. It was a very protracted, lengthy crime, driving from New Jersey, stopping at the Home Depot, picking up the crowbar, picking up the tarp that they ultimately used to wrap the body in, assaulting, kidnapping the nephew. So it wasn't just who hit him that ultimately justified Judge Griesbach's sentence of 40 years in this case. It was the seriousness of the offense. It was the impact on these victims. He looked at the disparity between the 35-year sentence that Mr. Singh got and the 40-year sentence that he was going to impose. He looked at the mitigating evidence, the letters that Mr. Bussara had presented. He looked at the fact that Mr. Bussara was making attempts post-conviction to cooperate with law enforcement. Judge Griesbach went through the 3553 factors at length and concluded that a 40-year sentence was appropriate. It enjoys the presumption of reasonableness, and I would ask the court to affirm.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you.
Mr. Schiff.
I'll be very brief. Please make no mistake that I do not stand before this court believing that a lengthy sentence for my client is not appropriate. This is a heinous crime, and as Ms. Jacobs said, lives were affected across the board. But the issue is not whether a lengthy sentence is appropriate or not. I concede that it is. The issue is whether the court, the district court, could rely on the evidence that relied on in order to make certain findings as to Mr. Bussara that resulted in a sentence for Mr. Bussara which exceeded that of Mr. Singh and was not either equal to or less than Mr. Singh.
Is your argument by that last statement that a 35-year sentence would be reasonable in this case?
I think it would depend on what the court said in justifying its findings to conclude.
Oh, I thought you said if it was the same sentence.
Well, I think we'd have to see what Judge Griesbach said was the reasons why Mr. Singh and Mr. Bissara were of equal culpability if that was the case. And we don't have the benefit of that. What we have is Judge Griesbach respectfully found a set of facts which is not supported in the record at all. He said they both did it together. That's at A104.
Well, in a way, they both did it together.
Well, but that's if you read Judge Griesbach's findings, at least as I read them, and perhaps I'm misreading them, it was that they were both in the room when the fatal blow was struck. And that's not Mr. Singh's statement. Mr. Singh's statement is that Mr. Bissara did it by himself, and that he, Mr. Singh, was in a different room. So
I was more interested in your statement, which I thought was that if he got the same sentence that Singh got, it would be acceptable here. And I'm wondering why that sentence couldn't just as well be 40 years for both as opposed to 35 years for both.
Well, except that, and I'm not suggesting to the court that if Mr. Bissara received a 35-year sentence, which was identical that to Mr. Singh's, that I'd be back here in front of the court. Maybe I would, maybe I wouldn't. I don't know. I'd have to obviously discuss that with my client, and decisions as to whether an appeal would be taken would or would not be made. But with respect to the findings that Judge Griesbach relied on and the facts that he relied on, I don't think you can have it both ways. Thank you. Appreciate your consideration.
Okay, thank you. This case is taken under advisement. And, Mr. Sheriff, you were appointed. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And we do thank you for this stellar job you've done for your client, and you have the thanks of the court.